recover. But who knows? If there's no damage to the Kanto during the season, their rice may have to support the whole empire this year and next. It would be far better if Lord Torunaga controlled such a harvest than Ishido. Nay? Yes, but so sorry. 19 days is not time enough to take in a harvest with all the prayers in the world. Mariko finished her sake. Yes. Kiri said, if their ship left the day before you, you must have hurried. I thought it best not to dawdle, Kiri-chan. It's no pleasure for me to travel. And Buntoro-san? He's well? Yes, he's in charge of Mishima and all the border at the moment. I saw him briefly coming here. Do you know where Kashigi Yabu-sama's staying? I have a message for him. In one of the guest houses. I'll find out which and send you word at once. Kiri accepted more wine. Thank you, Mariko-chan. I heard the Anjin-san's still on the galley. He's a very interesting man, Kiri-san. He's become more than a little useful to our master. I heard that. I want to hear everything about him and the earthquake and all your news. Oh, yes, there's a formal reception tomorrow evening for Lady Ochiba's birthday, given by Lord Ishido. Of course, you'll be invited. I heard that the Anjin-san's going to be invited, too. The Lady Ochiba wanted to see what he looks like. You remember the heir met him once? Wasn't that the first time you saw him, too? Yes. Poor man. So he's to be shown off, like a captive whale? Yes. Kiri added placidly. With all of us. We're all captives, Mariko-chan, whether we like it or not. Uraga hurried furtively down the alley toward the shore. The night dark, the sky clear and starlit, the air pleasant. He was dressed in the flowing orange robe of a Buddhist priest, his inevitable hat and cheap straw sandals. Behind him were warehouses and the tall, almost European bulk of the Jesuit mission. He turned a corner and redoubled his pace. Few people were about. A company of greys carrying flares patrolled the shore. He slowed as he passed them courteously, though with a priest's arrogance. The samurai hardly noticed him. He went unerringly along the foreshore, past beach fishing boats, the smells of the sea and shore heavy on the slight breeze. It was low tide. Scattered over the bay and sandy shelves were night fishermen, like so many fireflies, hunting with spears under their flares. Ahead, 200 paces, were the wharves and jetties, barnacle-encrusted. Moored to one of them was a Jesuit launcha, the flags of Portugal and the Company of Jesus fluttering, flares and more greys near the gangway. He changed direction to skirt the ship, heading back into the city a few blocks, then cut down 19th Street, turned into twisting alleys, and came out onto the road that followed the wharves once more. You halt! The order came out of the darkness. Uraga stopped in sudden panic. Greys came forward into the light and surrounded him. Where are you going, priest?
To the east of the city?
Uraga said haltingly, his mouth dry.
To our Nichiren shrine.
Ah, you're Nichiren, eh?
Another samurai said roughly.
I'm not one of those. I'm Zen Buddhist like the Lord General.
Zen? Ah, yes, Zen's the best, another said.
Wish I could understand that. It's too hard for my old head.
He's sweating a lot for a priest, isn't he? Why are you sweating? You mean priests don't sweat?
A few laughed, and someone held a flare closer.
Why should they sweat?
The rough man said.
All they do is sleep all day and pillow all night. Nuns, boys, dogs, themselves, anything they can get. And all the time stuff themselves with food they've never labored for. Priests are parasites like fleas.
Hey, leave him alone. He's just...
Take off your hat, priest.
Uraga stiffened.
Why? And why taunt a man who serves Buddha? Buddha's doing you no...
The samurai stepped forward pugnaciously.
I say, take off your hat.
Uraga obeyed. His head was newly shaven, as a priest should be, and he blessed whatever karma or spirit or gift from Buddha had prompted him to take that added precaution in case he was caught breaking curfew. All the Anjin San samurai had been ordered confined to the vessel by the port authorities, pending instructions from higher up.
"There's no cause to have foul manners,"
he flared with the Jesuit's unconscious authority.
"Serving Buddha's an honorable life, and becoming a priest is honorable, and should be the final part of every samurai's old age. Or do you know nothing of Bushido? Where are your manners?"
"What? You're samurai?"
"Of course I'm samurai. How else would I dare to talk to samurai about bad manners?"
Buraga put on his hat.
"It would be better for you to be patrolling than accosting and insulting innocent priests."
He walked off haughtily, his knees weak. The samurai watched him for a time, then one spat.
"Priests!"
"He was right," the senior samurai said sourly. "Where are your manners?"
"So sorry. Please excuse me."
Araga walked along the road, very proud of himself. Nearer the galley, he became wary again and waited a moment in the lee of a building. Then, gathering himself together, he walked into the flare-lit area.
"Good evening,"
he said politely to the greys, who lolled beside the gangplank, then added the religious blessing,
"Namu Amida Butsu."
"In the name of the Buddha Amida."
"Thank you. Namu Amida Butsu."
The greys let him pass without hindrance. Their orders were that the barbarian and all samurai were forbidden ashore except for Yabu and his honor guard. No one had said anything about the Buddhist priest who traveled with the ship. Greatly tired now, Uraga came onto the main deck.
"Uraga-san,"
Blackthorn called out softly from the quarterdeck.
"Over here."
Uraga squinted to adjust his eyes to the darkness. He saw Blackthorn, and he smelt the stale, brassy body aroma, and knew that the second shadow there had to be the other barbarian with the unpronounceable name, who could also speak Portuguese. He had almost forgotten what it was like to be away from the barbarian odor that was part of his life. The engine sand was the only one he had met who did not reek, which was one reason why he could serve him.
"Ah, Anjin-san,"
he whispered, and picked his way over to him, briefly greeting the 10 guards who were scattered around the deck. He waited at the foot of the gangway until Blackthorn motioned him up onto the quarterdeck.
"It went very..."
"Wait."
Blackthorn cautioned him as softly, and pointed.
"Look ashore, over there, near the warehouse. See him? No, north a little. There. You see him now?"
A shadow moved briefly, then merged into the darkness again.
"Who was it?"
"I've been watching you ever since you came into the road. He's been dogging you. You never saw him?"
"No, sir,"
Uraga replied, his foreboding returning to him.
"I saw no one, felt no one."
"He didn't have swords, so he wasn't samurai. A Jesuit?"
"I don't know. I don't think so. I was most careful there. Please excuse me that I didn't see him."
"Never mind."
Blackthorn glanced at Vink.
"Go below now, Johan. I'll finish this watch and wake you at dawn. Thanks for waiting."
Vink touched his forelock and went below. The dank smell left with him.
"I was getting worried about you," Blackthorn said. "What happened?"
"Yabu-sama's messenger was slow, Anjin-san. Here is my report. I went with Yabu-sama and waited outside the castle from noon till just after dark, when..."
"What were you doing all that time? Exactly?"
"Exactly, sir. I chose a quiet place near the marketplace in sight of First Bridge, and I put my mind into meditation. The Jesuit practice, Anjin-san, but not about God, only about you and Yabu-sama and your future, sire."
Uraga smiled.
"Many passers-by put coins into my begging bowl. I let my body rest and my mind roam, though I watched the First Bridge all the time. Yabu-sama's messenger came after dark and pretended to pray with me until we were quite alone. The messenger whispered this. Yabu-sama says that he will be staying in the castle tonight and that he will return tomorrow morning. There is to be an official function in the castle
tomorrow night that you will be invited to, given by General Lord Ishido. Finally, you should consider 70.
Uraga peered at him.
The samurai repeated that twice, so I presume it's private code, sire.
Blackthorn nodded, but did not volunteer that this was one of many prearranged signals between Yabu and himself. 70 meant that he should ensure the ship was prepared for an instant retreat to sea. But with all his samurai, seamen, and rowers confined aboard, the ship was ready. And as everyone was very aware they were in enemy waters, and all were greatly troubled, Blackthorn knew it would require no effort to get the ship headed out to sea.
Go on, Uraga-san.
That was all, except I was to tell you, Toda Mariko-san arrived today.
Ah, did she... Isn't that a very fast time to make the land journey here from Edo?
Yes, sir. Actually, while I was waiting, I saw her company go across the bridge. It was in the afternoon, the middle of the hour of the goat. The horses were lathered and muddy and the bearers very tired. Yoshinika-san led them.
Did any of them see you?
No, sire. No, I don't think so.
How many were there?
About 200 samurai, with porters and baggage horses. Twice that number of greys escorting them. One of the baggage horses had panniers of carrier pigeons.
Good. Next?
As soon as I was able, I left. There's a noodle shop near the mission that many merchants, rice and silk brokers, mission people, use. I went there and ate and listened. The father visitor is again in residence here. Many more converts in Osaka area. Permission has been granted for a huge mass in 20 days, in honor of Lords Kiyama and Onoshi.
Is that important?
Yes, and astonishing for such a service to be permitted openly. It is to celebrate the Feast of St. Bernard. 20 days is the day after the obeisance ceremony, before the exalted.
Yabu had told Blackthorn about the Emperor through Uraga. The news had swept through the whole ship, increasing everyone's premonition of disaster.
What else?
In the marketplace, many rumors. Most ill-omened. Yodoko-sama, the Taiko's widow, is very sick.
That's bad, Anjin-san, because her counsel is always listened to and always reasonable. Some say Lord Torunaga is already near Nagoya. Others say he's not yet reached Odawara. So no one knows what to believe. All agree the harvest will be terrible this year, here in Osaka, which means the Kanto becomes even more greatly important. Most people think civil war will begin as soon as Lord Torunaga is dead, at which time the great daimyos will begin to fight among themselves. The price of gold is very high, and interest rates up to 70%, which...
That's impossibly high! You must be mistaken.
Blackthorn got up and eased his back, then leaned wearily against the gunwale. Politely, Uraga and all samurai got up too. It would have been bad manners for them to sit while their master stood.
"Please excuse me, Anjin-san," Uraga was saying. "It's never less than 50%, and usually 65 to 70, even 80. Almost 20 years ago, the father visitor petitioned the Pope to allow us, to allow the society, to lend at 10%. He was right that his suggestion, it was approved, Anjin-san, would bring lustres to Christianity and many converts. For, of course, only Christians could get loans, which were always modest. You don't pay such highs in your country?
Really? That's usury. You understand usury?
I understand the word, yes. But usury would not begin for us under 100%. I was going to tell you also... Now rice is very expensive, and that's a bad omen. It's double what it was when I was here a few weeks ago. Land is cheap. Now would be a good time to buy land here, or a house. In the typhoon and fires, perhaps 10,000 homes die, and 2,000-3,000 people. That's all, Anjin-san.
That's very good. You've done very well. You've missed your real vocation.
Sire?
Nothing, Blackthorn said, not yet knowing how far he could tease Uraga.
You've done very well.
Thank you, sire.
Blackthorn thought a moment, then asked him about the function tomorrow, and Uraga advised him as best he could. Finally, Uraga told him about his escape from the patrol.
"Would your hair have given you away?"
Blackthorn asked.
"Oh, yes. Enough for them to take me to their officer."
Uraga wiped the sweat off his forehead.
"So sorry. It's hot, eh?"
"Very," Blackthorn agreed politely, and let his mind sift the information. He glanced seaward, unconsciously checking the sky and sea and wind. Everything was fine and orderly, the fishing boats complacently drifting with the tide, near and far, a spearman in the prow of each under a lantern, stabbing down from time to time, and most always bringing up a fine bream or mullet or red snapper that curled and twisted on the spike.
"One last thing, sir. I went to the mission, all around the mission. The guards were very alert, and I could never get in there. At least, I don't think so, not unless I went past one of them. I watched for a while, but before I left, I saw Chimoko, Lady Toda's maid, go in."
"You're sure?"
"Yes. Another maid was with her. I think..."
"Lady Mariko? Disguised?"
"No, sir. I'm sure it was not. This second maid was too tall."
Blackthorn looked seaward again and murmured, half to himself,
"What's the significance of that?"
"Lady Mariko is she's Catholic, ne? She knows the Father Visitor very well. It was he who converted her. Lady Mariko is the most very important lady, the most famous in the realm, after the three highest nobility, the Lady Ochiba, the Lady Genjiko, and Yodoko-sama, the wife of the Taiko."
"Mariko-san might want confession, or a mass, or a conference. She sent Chimoko to arrange them?"
"Any or all, Anjin-san. All ladies of the daimyos, both of friends to the Lord General and of those who might oppose him, are confined very much to the castle, eh? Once in, they stay in, like fish in a golden bowl, waiting to be speared."
"Leave it. Enough of your doom talk."
"So sorry. Even so, Anjin-san, I think now the Lady Toda will come out no more, until the 19th day."
"I told you to leave it. I understand about hostages and a last day."
It was quiet on deck, all their voices muted. The guard was resting easily, waiting out their watch. Small water lapped the hull, and the ropes creaked pleasantly. After a moment, Uraga said,
"Perhaps Chimoko brought a summons, a request for the Father Visitor to go to her. She was surely under guard when she crossed First Bridge. Surely Toda Mariko no Buntaro no Jinsai was under guard from the first moment she crossed from Lord Torunaga's borders, ne?"
"Can we know if the Father Visitor goes to the castle?"
"Yes, that is easy."
"How to know what's said, or what's done?"
"That is very hard. Very sorry, but they would speak Portuguese or Latin, eh? And who speaks both but you and me? I would be recognized by both."
Uraga motioned at the castle and at the city.
"There are many Christians there. Any would gain great favor by removing you or me, eh?"
Blackthorn did not answer. No answer was needed.
He was seeing the donjon etched against the stars, and he remembered Uraga telling him about the legendary limitless treasure it protected, the Taiko's plunder levy of the Empire.
But now his mind was on what Torunaga might be doing and thinking and planning, and exactly where Mariko was, and what was the use of going on to Nagasaki.
"Then you're saying the 19th day is the last day, a death day, Yabu-san?"
he'd repeated, almost nauseated by the knowledge that the trap was sprung on Torunaga, and therefore on him and Erasmus.
"Shigata ganai. We go quickly, Nagasaki, and back again. Quick, understand? Only 4 days to get men. Then come back. But why? When Torunaga here, all die, ne?"
he had said. But Yabu had gone ashore, telling him that the day after tomorrow they would leave. In a ferment, he had watched him go, wishing that he had brought Erasmus and not the galley. If he had had Erasmus, he knew that he would have somehow bypassed Osaka and headed straight for Nagasaki. Or even more probably, he would have limped off over the horizon to find some snug harbor and taken time out from eternity to train his vassals to work the ship.
"You're a fool," he flayed himself. "With the few crew you've got now, you couldn't have docked her here, let alone found that harbor to wait out the devil storm. You'd be dead already."
"No worry, sir. Karma,"
Urago was saying.
"Aye, karma."
Then Blackthorn heard danger seaward, and his body moved before his mind ordered it, and he was twisting as the arrow swooshed past, missed him fractionally to shudder into the bulkhead. He lunged at Uraga to pull him down to safety, as another arrow of the same volley hissed into Uraga's throat, impaling him, and they were both cowering in safety on the deck, Uraga shrieking and Samurai shouting and peering over the gunwale out to sea. Greys from the shore guard poured aboard. Another volley came out of the night from the sea, and everyone scattered for cover. Blackthorn crawled to the gunwale and peeped through a scupper and saw a nearby fishing boat dousing its flare to vanish into the darkness. All the boats were doing the same, and for a split second he saw scullers pulling away frantically, light glinting off swords and bows. Uraga's shrieking subsided into a burbling, gut-shattering agony as Greys rushed onto the quarterdeck, bows ready, the whole ship now in an uproar. Vink came on deck fast, pistol ready, ducked over as he ran.
"Christ, what's going on? You all right, pilot?"
"Yes. Watch out. They're in the fishing boats."
Blackthorn slithered back to Uraga, who was clawing at the shaft, blood seeping from his nose and mouth and ears.
"Jesus," Vink gasped.
Blackthorn took hold of the arrow's barb with one hand and put his other on the warm, pulsing flesh and pulled with all his strength. The arrow came out cleanly, but in its wake, blood gushed in a pumping stream. Uraga began to choke. Now Greys and Blackthorn's own samurai surrounded them. Some had brought shields, and they covered Blackthorn, heedless of their own safety. Others quaked in safety, though the danger was over. Others were raging at the night, firing at the night, ordering the vanished fishing boats back. Blackthorn held Uraga in his arms helplessly, knowing there was something he should do, but not knowing what, knowing nothing could be done, the frantic six-sweet death smell clogging his nostrils, his brain shrieking as always, "Christ Jesus! Thank God it's not my blood! Not mine! Thank God!" He saw Uraga's eyes begging, the mouth working with no sound but choking, the chest heaving. Then he saw his own fingers move of themselves, and they made the sign of the cross before the eyes, and he felt Uraga's body shuddering, fluttering, the mouth howling soundlessly, reminding him of any one of the impaled fish. It took Uraga a hideous time to die. Chapter 53. Now Blackthorn was walking in the castle with his honor guard of 20 vassals, surrounded by 10 times that number of escorting Greys. Proudly, he wore a new uniform, brown kimono with the 5 Toranaga ciphers, and, for the first time, a formal, huge-winged overmantle. His golden wavy hair was tied in a neat queue. The swords that Toranaga had given him jutted from his sash correctly. His feet were encased in new tabi and thonged sandals. Greys in abundance were at every intersection, covering every battlement, in a vast show of Ishido strength. For every daimyo and general and every samurai officer of importance in Osaka had been invited tonight to the great hall that the Taiko had built within the inner ring of fortifications. The sun was down and night arriving quickly.
"It's terrible luck to lose Uraga,"
Blackthorn was thinking, still not knowing if the attack had been against Uraga or himself.
"I've lost the best source of knowledge I could ever have." "At noon you go castle, Anjin-san,"
Yabu had said this morning, when he had returned to the galley.
"Greys come for you. You understand?"
"Yes, Yabu-sama."
"Quite safe now. Sorry about attack. Shigataganai. Greys take you safe place. Tonight you stay in castle. Toranaga part of castle. Also next day, we go Nagasaki.
We have permission? He had asked. Yabu shook his head with exasperation.
Pretend go Mishima to collect Lord Hiromatsu. Also Lord Sudara and family. Understand?
Yes.
Good. Sleep now, Anjin-san. Don't worry about attack. Now all boats ordered stay away from here. It's Kenjiro here now.
I understand. Please excuse me. What happens tonight? Why me to castle?
Yabu had smiled his twisted smile and told him he was on show, that Ishida was curious to see him again.
As a guest, you'll be safe.
And he had left the galley once more. Blackthorn had gone below, leaving Vink on watch, but the moment he was deeply asleep, Vink was tugging him awake, and he rushed on deck again. A small Portuguese 20-cannon frigate was barreling into harbour, the bit between her teeth, heeled over under a full press of canvas.
"Blast, it's in a hurry!"
Vink said, quaking.
"Got to be Rodriguez. No one else had come in with all that sail." "If I was you, pilot, I'd get us the hell away from here on the tide, or without the tide. Christ Jesus, we're like moths in a grog bottle. Let's get out."
"We stay. Can't you get it through your head? We stay until we're allowed to leave. We stay until Ishido says we can go. Even if the Pope and the King of Spain come ashore, together with the whole God-cursed armada."
Again he had gone below, but sleep had avoided him. At noon, Greys arrived. Heavily escorted, he went with them to the castle. They wound through the city, passing the execution ground, the five crosses still there, figures still being tied up and taken down, each cross with its two spearsmen, the crowd watching. He had relived that agony and the terror of the ambush, and the feel of his hand on the hilt of his sword, the kimono about him, his own vassals with him, did not lessen his dread. The Greys had guided him to Toranaga's part of the castle that he had visited the first time, where Kiritsubo and the Lady Suzuko and her child were still ensconced, along with the remainder of Toranaga's samurai. There he had had a bath and found the new clothes that had been laid out for him.
"Is Lady Mariko here?"
"No, sire. So sorry,"
the servant had told him.
"Then where can I find her, please? I have urgent message."
"So sorry, Anjin-san. I don't know. Please excuse me."
None of the servants would help him. All said, "So sorry, I don't know." He addressed, then referred to his dictionary, remembering key words that he would need, and prepared as best he could. Then he went into the garden to watch the rocks growing. But they never grew. Now he was walking across the innermost moat. Flares were everywhere. He shook off his anxiety and stepped out onto the wooden bridge. Other guests with Greys were all around, heading the same way. He could feel them watching him covertly. His feet took him under the final portcullis, and his Greys led through the maze again up to the huge door. Here they left him. So did his own men. They went to one side with other samurai to await him. He went forward into the flare-lit moor. It was an immense, high-raftered room with a golden-ornamented ceiling. Gold-paneled columns supported the rafters, which were made of rare and polished woods and cherished like the hangings on the walls. 500 samurai and their ladies were there, wearing all the colors of the rainbow, their fragrances mingling with incense perfume from the precious woods that smoked on tiny wall braziers. Blackthorn's eyes raced over the crowd to find Mariko, or Yabu, or any friendly face. But he found none. To one side was a line of guests who waited to bow before the raised platform at the far end. The courtier, Prince Ogaki Takamoto, was standing there. Blackthorn recognized Ishido, tall, lean, and autocratic, also beside the platform, and he remembered vividly the blinding power of the man's blow on his face, and then his own fingers knotting around the man's throat. On the platform, alone, was the Lady Ochiba. She sat comfortably on a cushion. Even from this distance he could see the exquisite richness of her kimono, gold threads on the rarest blue-black silk.
"The Most High!"
Uraga had called her in awe, telling him much about her and her history during their journey. She was slight, almost girlish in build, with a luminous glow to her fair skin. Her slow eyes were large under painted, arched brows, her hair set like a winged helmet. The procession of guests crept forward. Blackthorn was standing to one side in a pool of light, a head taller than those nearby. Politely, he stepped aside to get out of the way of some passing guests, and saw Ochiba's eyes turn to him. Now Ishida was looking at him too. They said something to each other, and her fan moved. Their eyes returned to him. Uneasily, he went toward a wall to become less conspicuous, but a gray barred his way.
"Dozo,"
the samurai said politely, motioning at the line.
"Hi, Domo,"
Blackthorn said, and joined it. Those in front bowed, and others that came after him bowed. He returned their bows. Soon all conversation died. Everyone was looking at him. Embarrassed, the men and women ahead in the line moved out of his way. Now no one was between him and the platform. He stood rigid momentarily. Then, in the utter silence, he walked forward. In front of the platform he knelt and bowed formally, once to her and once to Ishido, as he had seen others do. He got up again, petrified that his swords would fall, or that he would slip and be disgraced. But everything went satisfactorily, and he began to back away.
"Please wait, Anjin-san," she said.
He waited. Her luminosity seemed to have increased, and her femininity. He felt the extraordinary sensuality that surrounded her, without conscious effort on her part.
"It is said that you speak our language."
Her voice was unaccountably personal.
"Please excuse me, Highness,"
Blackthorn began, using his time-tried stock phrase, stumbling slightly in his nervousness.
"So sorry, but I have to use short words, and respectfully ask you to use very simple words to me, so that I may have the honor of understanding you."
He knew that without doubt his life could easily depend on his answers. All attention in the room was on them now. Then he noticed Yabu moving carefully through the throng, coming closer.
"May I respectfully congratulate you on your birthday, and pray that you live to enjoy 1,000 more."
"These are hardly simple words, Anjin-san,"
Lady Ochiba said, very impressed.
"Please excuse me, Highness. I learned that last night. The right way to say, ne?"
"Who taught you that?"
"Uraga no Tadasima, my vassal."
She frowned, then glanced at Ishido, who bent forward and spoke, too rapidly for Blackthorn to catch anything, other than the word arrows.
"Ah, the renegade Christian priest who was killed last night on your ship?"
"Highness?"
"The man, samurai who was killed, eh? Last night on ship. You understand?"
"Ah, so sorry. Yes, him."
Blackthorn glanced at Ishido, then back at her.
"Please excuse me, Highness. Your permission greets the Lord General?"
"Yes, you have that permission."
"Good evening, Lord General,"
Blackthorn said with studied politeness.
"Last time meet, I very terrible mad. So sorry."
Ishido returned the bow perfunctorily.
"Yes, you were, and very impolite. I hope you won't get mad tonight, or any other night."
"Very mad that night. Please excuse me."
"That madness is usual among barbarians, eh?"
Such public rudeness to a guest was very bad. Blackthorn's eyes flashed to Lady Ochiba for an instant, and he discerned surprise in her, too. So he gambled.
"Ah, Lord General, you are most very right. Barbarian always say madness. But so sorry. Now I am samurai, Hatamoto, this great, so very great honor to me. I am no longer barbarian."
He used his quarterdeck voice, which carried without shouting, and filled all the corners of the room.
"Now I understand samurai manners, and little bushido, and wa. I am no longer barbarian. Please excuse." "Ne?"
He spoke the last word as a challenge, unafraid. He knew that Japanese understood masculinity and pride,
and honoured them. Ishido laughed.
So, Samurai Anjin-san, he said, jovial now. Yes, I accept your apology. Rumours about your courage are true. Good, very good. I should apologize also. Terrible that filthy Ronin could do such a thing. You understand? Attack in night.
Yes, I understand, sire. Very bad. Four men dead. One of my three greys.
Listen, bad, very bad. Don't worry, Anjin-san. No more.
Thoughtfully, Ishido glanced at the room. Everyone understood him very clearly.
Now I order guards. Understand? Very careful, guards. No more assassin attacks. None. You very carefully guarded now. Quite safe in castle.
Thank you. So sorry for trouble.
No trouble. You important, ne? You samurai. You have special samurai place with Lord Toranaga. I don't forget. Never fear.
Blackthorn thanked Ishido again and turned to the Lady Ochiba.
Highness, in my land, we has queen. Have queen. Please excuse my bad Japanese. Yes, my land rule by queen. In my land, we have custom always must give lady birthday gift. Even queen.
From the pocket in his sleeve, he took out the pink camellia blossom that he had cut off a tree in the garden. He laid it in front of her, fearful he was overreaching himself.
Please excuse me if not good manners to give.
She looked at the flower. 500 people waited breathlessly to see how she would respond to the daring and the gallantry of the barbarian, and the trap he had, perhaps, unwittingly placed her in.
I am not a queen, Anjin-san, she said slowly. Only the mother of the heir and widow of the Lord Taiko. I cannot accept your gift as a queen, for I am not a queen. Could never be a queen. Do not pretend to be a queen, and do not wish to be a queen.
Then she smiled at the room and said to everyone,
But as a lady on her birthday, perhaps I may have your permission to accept the Anjin-san's gift?
The room burst into applause. Blackthorn bowed and thanked her, having understood only that the gift was accepted. When the crowd was silent again, Lady Ochiba called out,
Mariko-san, your pupil does you credit, nay?
Mariko was coming through the guests, a youth beside her. Near them, he recognized Kiritsubo and the Lady Sazuko. He saw the youth smile at a young girl, then, self-consciously, catch up with Mariko.
Good evening, Lady Toda, Blackthorn said, then added dangerously in Latin, intoxicated by his success. The evening is more beautiful because of thy presence.
Thank you, Anjin-san,
she replied in Japanese, her cheeks colouring. She walked up to the platform, but the youth stayed within the circle of onlookers. Mariko bowed to Ochiba.
I have done little, Ochiba-sama. It's all the Anjin-san's work, and the word book that the Christian fathers gave him. Ah, yes, the word book.
Ochiba made Blackthorn show it to her, and with Mariko's help, explain it elaborately. She was fascinated. So was Ishido.
We must get copies, Lord General. Please order them to give us 100 of the books. With these, our young men could soon learn barbarian, ne?
Yes, it's a good idea, lady. The sooner we have our own interpreters, the better.
Ishido laughed.
Let Christians break their own monopoly, ne?
An iron-grey samurai in his 60s, who stood in the front of the guest, said,
Christians own no monopoly, Lord General. We ask the Christian fathers. In fact, we insist that they be interpreters and negotiators, because they're the only ones who can talk to both sides and are trusted by both sides. Lord Gorida began the custom, eh? And then the Taiko continued it. Of course, Lord Kiyama. I meant no disrespect to daimyos or samurai who have become Christian. I referred only to the monopoly of the Christian priests.
Ishido said,
It would be better for us if our people, and not foreign priests, any priests for that matter, controlled our trade with China.
Kiyama said,
There's never been a case of fraud, Lord General. Prices are fair, the trade is easy and efficient, and the fathers control their own people. Without the southern barbarians, there's no silk, no China trade. Without the fathers, we could have much trouble. Very much trouble. So sorry. Please excuse me for mentioning it.
Ah, Lord Kiyama,
the Lady Ochiba said.
I'm sure Lord Ishido is honored that you correct him. Isn't that so, Lord General? What would the council be without Lord Kiyama's advice?
Of course, Ishido said.
Kiyama bowed stiffly, not unpleased. Ochiba glanced at the youth and fluttered her fan.
How about you, Saruji-san? Perhaps you would like to learn barbarian?
The boy blushed under their scrutiny. He was slim and handsome, and tried hard to be more manly than his almost 15 years.
Oh, I hope I wouldn't have to do that, Ochiba-sama. Oh, no. But if it is ordered, I will try. Yes, I try very hard.
They laughed at his ingenuousness. Mariko said proudly in Japanese,
Anjin-san, this is my son, Saruji.
Blackthorn had been concentrating on their conversation, most of which was too fast and too vernacular for him to comprehend. But he had heard Kiyama, and an alarm went off. He bowed to Saruji, and the bow was formally returned.
He's a very fine man, eh? Lucky have such a fine son, Mariko-sama.
His veiled eyes were looking at the youth's right hand. It was permanently twisted. Then he remembered that once Mariko had told him her son's birth had been prolonged and difficult.
Poor lad, he thought. How can he use a sword?
He took his eyes away. No one had noticed the direction of his glance, except Saruji. He saw embarrassment and pain in the youth's face.
Lucky have fine son, he said to Mariko. But surely impossible, Mariko-sama. You have such big son. Not enough years, ne?
Ochiba said,
Are you always so gallant, Anjin-san? Do you always say such clever things?
Please?
Ah, always so clever? Compliments? Do you understand?
No, so sorry. Please excuse me.
Blackthorn's head was aching from concentration. Even so, when Mariko told him what had been said, he replied with mock gravity,
Ah, so sorry, Mariko-sama. If Saruji-san is truly your son... Please tell the Lady Ochiba, I did not know that ladies here were married at 10.
She translated, then added something that made them laugh.
What did you say?
Ah,
Mariko noticed Kiyama's baleful eyes on Blackthorn.
Please excuse me, Lord Kiyama. May I introduce the Anjin-san to you?
Kiyama acknowledged Blackthorn's very correct bow, politely.
They say you claim to be a Christian.
Please? Kiyama did not deign to repeat it, so Mariko translated.
Ah, so sorry, Lord Kiyama,
Blackthorn said in Japanese.
Yes, I'm Christian, but different sect. Your sect is not welcome in my lands, nor in Nagasaki or Kyushu, I'd imagine, or in any lands of any Christian daimyos.
Mariko kept her smile in place. She was wondering if Kiyama had personally ordered the Amida assassin, and also the attack last night. She translated, taking the edge off Kiyama's discourtesy, everyone in the room listening intently.
I'm not a priest, Lord, Blackthorn said, direct to Kiyama. If I in your land, only trade. No priest talk or teach. Respectfully ask trade only. I do not want your trade. I do not want you in my lands. You are forbidden, my lands, on pain of death. Do you understand?
Yes,
I understand, Blackthorn said. So sorry.
Good.
Kiyama haughtily turned to Ishido.
We should exclude this sect and these barbarians completely from the Empire. I will propose this at the Council's next meeting. I must say openly that I think Lord Terunaga was ill-advised to make any foreigner, particularly this man, samurai. It's a very dangerous precedent. Surely that's unimportant. All the mistakes of the present Lord of the Kanto will be corrected very soon.
Nay.
Everyone makes mistakes, Lord General, Kiyama said pointedly. Only God is all-seeing and perfect. The only real mistake Lord Terunaga has ever made is to put his own interests before those of the heir.
Yes, Ishido said.
Please excuse me, Mariko said, but that's not true. I'm sorry, but you're both mistaken about my master.
Kiyama turned on her, politely.
It's perfectly correct for you to take that position, Mariko-san, but please let's not discuss that tonight. So, Lord General, where is Lord Terunaga now? What's your latest news?
By yesterday's carrier pigeon, I heard he was at Mishima. Now I'm getting daily reports on his progress.
Good. Then in 2 days he'll leave his own borders?
Kiyama asked.
Yes. Lord Ikawa Jikyu is ready to welcome him as his position merits.
Good.
Kiyama smiled at Ochiba. He was very fond of her.
On that day, lady, in honor of the occasion, perhaps you would ask the heir if he would allow the regents to bow before him.
The heir would be honored, sire, she replied, to applause. And afterwards, perhaps? You and everyone here would be his guests at a poetry competition. Perhaps the regents would be the judges.
There was more applause.
Thank you, but please, perhaps you and Prince Ogaki and some of the ladies would be the judges.
Very well, if you wish.
Now, lady, what's the theme to be? And the first line of the poem?
Kiyama asked, very pleased, for he was renowned for his poetry, as well as his swordsmanship and ferocity in war.
Please, Mariko-san, would you answer Lord Kiyama?
Ochiba said, and again many there admired her adroitness. She was an indifferent poetess, where Mariko was renowned. Mariko was glad the time had come to begin. She thought a moment, then she said,
It should be about today, Lord Ochiba. And the first line? On a leafless branch.
Ochiba and all of them complimented her on her choice. Kiyama was genial now and said,
Excellent, but we'll have to be very good to compete with you, Mariko-san.
I hope you will excuse me, sire, but I won't be competing.
Of course you'll compete, Kiyama laughed. You're one of the best in the realm. It wouldn't be the same if you didn't.
So sorry, sire. Please excuse me, but I will not be here.
I don't understand.
Ochiba said,
What do you mean, Mariko-chan? Oh, please excuse me, lady, Mariko said, but I'm leaving Osaka tomorrow, with the Lady Kiritsubo and the Lady Sazuko.
Ishido's smile vanished.
Leaving for where?
To meet our liege lord, sire.
He... Lord Terunaga will be here in a few days, ne?
It's months since the Lady Sazuko has seen her husband, and my Lord Terunaga hasn't yet had the pleasure of seeing his newest son. Naturally, the Lady Kiritsubo will accompany us. It's been equally long since he's seen the mistress of his ladies, ne?
Lord Terunaga will be here so soon that to go to meet him isn't necessary.
But I think it is necessary, Lord General.
Ishido said crisply,
You've only just arrived, and we've been looking forward to your company, Mariko-san, the Lady Ochiba particularly. I agree again with Lord Kiyama. Of course you must compete.
So sorry, but I will not be here.
Obviously, you're tired, lady.
You've just arrived. Certainly this is hardly the time to discuss such a private matter.
Ishido turned to Ochiba.
Perhaps, Lady Ochiba, you should greet the remainder of your guests.
Yes, yes, of course,
Ochiba said, flustered. At once the line began to form up obediently. A nervous conversation began. But the silence fell again as Mariko said,
Thank you, Lord General. I agree, but this isn't a private matter, and there's nothing to discuss. I am leaving tomorrow to pay my respects to my liege lord, with his ladies.
Ishido said coldly, You are here, lady, at the personal invitation of the Son of Heaven, together with the welcome of the regents. Please be patient. Your lord will be here very soon now.
I agree, sire. But His Imperial Majesty's invitation is for the 22nd day. It does not order me or anyone confined to Osaka until that time. Or does it?
You forget your manners, Lady Toda.
Please excuse me. That was the last thing I intended. So sorry. I apologize.
Mariko turned to Ogaki, the courtier.
Lord, does the Exalted's invitation require me to stay here until he arrives?
Ogaki's smile was set.
The invitation is for the 22nd day of this month, lady. It requires your presence then.
Thank you, sire.
Mariko bowed and faced the platform again.
It requires my presence then, Lord General. Not before, so I shall leave tomorrow.
Please be patient, lady. The regents have welcomed you, and there are many preparations on which they'll need your assistance against the Exalted's arrival. Now, Lady Arch...
So sorry, sire, but the orders of my liege lord take precedence. I must leave tomorrow.
You will not leave tomorrow, and you are asked... No, begged, Mariko-san, to take part in the Lady Ochiba's competition. Now, lady.
Then I am confined here, against my will?
Ochiba said,
Mariko-san, let's leave the matter now, please. So sorry, Ochiba-sama, but I am a simple person. I've said openly I have orders from my liege lord. If I cannot obey them, I must know why. Lord General, am I confined here until the 22nd day? If so, by whose orders?
You are an honored guest, Ishido told her carefully, willing her to submit. I repeat, lady, your lord will be here soon enough.
Mariko felt his power, and she fought to resist it.
Yes, but so sorry. Again, I respectfully ask... Am I confined to Osaka for the next 18 days? And if so, on whose orders?
Ishido kept his eyes riveted on her.
No, you are not confined.
Thank you, sire. Please excuse me for speaking so directly, Mariko said.
Many of the ladies in the room turned to their neighbors, and some whispered openly what all those held against their will in Osaka were thinking. If she can go, so can I go, nay? So can you, nay? I'm going tomorrow. Oh, how wonderful! Ishido's voice cut through the undercurrent of whispering.
But Lady Toda, since you've chosen to speak in this presumptuous fashion, I feel it is my duty to ask the regents for a formal rejection, in case others might share your misunderstanding.
He smiled mirthlessly in the frozen hush.
Until that time, you will hold yourself in readiness to answer their questions and receive the ruling.
Mariko said, I would be honored, sire, but my duty is to my liege lord.
Of course, but this will only be for a few days.
So sorry, sire, but my duty is to my liege lord for the next few days.
You will possess yourself with patience, lady. It will take but a little time. This matter is ended. Now, Lord Ki...
So sorry, but I cannot delay my departure for a little time.
Ishido bellowed,
You refuse to obey the Council of Regents?
No, sire, Mariko said proudly. Not unless they trespass on my duty to my liege lord, which is a samurai's paramount duty.
You will hold yourself ready to meet the regents with filial patience!
So sorry. I am ordered by my liege lord to escort his ladies to meet him. At once.
She took a scroll out of her sleeve and handed it to Ishido formally. He tore it open and scanned it. Then he looked up and said,
Even so, you will wait for a ruling from the regents.
Mariko looked hopefully to Ochiba, but there was only bleak disapproval there. She turned to Kiyama. Kiyama was equally silent, equally unmoved.
Please excuse me, Lord General, but there's no war, she began. My master's obeying the regents, so for the next 18...
This matter is closed!
This matter is closed, Lord General, when you have the manners to let me finish. I'm no peasant to be trodden on. I'm Toda Mariko no Buntoro no Hiromatsu, daughter of the Lord Akechi Jinsai. My line's Takashima, and we've been samurai for 1,000 years, and I say I will never be captive or hostage or confined. For the next 18 days, and until the day, by fiat of the Exalted, I am free to go as I please, as is anyone.
Our master, the Taiko, was once a peasant. Many, many samurai are peasants, were peasants. Every daimyo was once in the past peasant, even the first Takashima. Everyone was peasant once. Listen carefully. You will await the pleasure of the regents.
No. So sorry. My first duty is obedience to my liege lord.
Enraged, Ishido began to walk toward her. Although Blackthorn had understood almost nothing of what had been said, his right hand slid unnoticed into his left sleeve to prepare the concealed throwing knife. Ishido stood over her.
You will.
At that moment, there was a movement at the doorway. A tear-stained maid weaved through the throng and ran up to Ochiba.
Please excuse me, mistress, she whimpered. But it's Yodoko-sama. She's asking for you. She's... You must hurry. The heir's already there.
Worriedly, Ochiba looked back at Mariko and at Ishido, then at the faces staring up at her. She half bowed to her guests and hurried away. Ishido hesitated.
I'll deal with you later, Mariko-san, he said.
Then followed Ochiba, his footsteps heavy on the tatamis. In his wake, the whispering began to ebb and flow again. Bells tolled the hour change. Blackthorn walked over to Mariko.
Mariko-san, he asked, what's happening?
She continued to stare sightlessly at the platform. Kiyama took his cramped hand off his sword hilt and flexed it.
Mariko-san.
Yes? Yes, sire?
May I suggest you go back to your house? Perhaps I may be permitted to talk to you later. Say, at the hour of the boar.
Yes. Yes. Of course. Please. Please excuse me. But I had to...
Her words trailed away.
This is an ill-omened day, Mariko-san. May God take you into his keeping.
Kiyama turned his back on her and spoke to the room with authority.
I suggest we return to our homes to wait. To wait and to pray that the Infinite may take for Lady Yodoko quickly and easily and with honor into his peace, if her time has come.
He glanced at Tsurugi, who was still transfixed.
You come with me.
He walked out. Tsurugi began to follow, not wanting to leave his mother, but impelled by the order and intimidated by the attention on him. Mariko made a half bow to the room and started to leave. Kiri licked her dry lips. Lady Sazuko was beside her, tremulously apprehensive. Kiri took the Lady Sazuko's hand, and together the two women followed Mariko. Yalu stepped forward with Blackthorn, and they strode out behind them, very conscious that they were the only samurai present wearing Torunaga's uniform.